60th chapter. Text 1. Sri Bhadrayani Ruvacha.
Sri Bhadrayani Ruvacha.
Karhichit Sukhamasinam.
Sutalpastham
Jagadgurum. Patim Paryacharat Bhaishmi. Yajanena Sakhi Janaihi. Sri Bhadrayani said, once in the company of her maidservants, Queen Rukmini was personally serving her husband, the spiritual master of the universe, by fanning him as he relaxed on her bed. So, Sukadeva Goswami is describing certain incidents that happened in the 10th canto, in the part of Krishna's pastimes in Dwaraka. So far he described Krishna's marriage with Rukmini and Krishna's marriage with Satyabhama, and as a part of that Samantakamani episode, and as a part of that only Jambavati also he married. After marrying these three queens, he also married five other queens. So after that he also killed Narakasura and married 16,100 queens. Like that, 16,108 queens' marriages are described so far. Now continuing that narration, Sukadeva Goswami describes Krishna's certain interactions with Rukmini, Rukmi, and other such incidents in the next couple of chapters. So once, Krishna was sitting in a very relaxed way in Rukmini's palace, and he wanted to tease Rukmini. Svatalpastham Jagadgurum. Krishna is described as Jagadguru in this context because he is the spiritual master of the entire universe. So he is Jagadguru and he is also Patim Paryacharat Bhaishmi. Patim is husband. So he is the husband of Goddess of Fortune. He is the husband of Rukmini, Queen Rukmini here. So what Krishna does in this entire episode is a joking affair with his beloved queen, the first queen. And through that, he is only glorifying the unparalleled devotion of Queen Rukmini. So, Krishna Chakravarti Thakur gives this comparison. Rukmini is like that camphor, fragrant camphor. In this chapter, Krishna appeared like a grinding stone. You do early in the morning, oh, you don't do that backup. Someone else does. So you take chandan and then grind, right? So during Abhishek you grind with many other ingredients. So now chandan means you directly take the log and grind and chandan will come out. If it is camphor, fragrant camphor, you have to take a stone, another stone, and put it under that. There is a grinding stone, right? There are two stones are there. There is a base platform and there is another stone that is used to grind. So between these two stones, the camphor is crushed to pieces, to powder. It will become like paste, right? So apparently it's being like too harsh on the camphor, but then only the fragrance will come out. That's a regular practice. Masala. How you do masala for your regular cooking? So you have to grind it. You have to put it in, you have to powder them into pieces. To make that vada pav or whatever, you need to mash the potato, boil and mash the potato, then only the taste will come out. That's what Krishna is doing with Rukmini. Krishna teases Rukmini like anything because Krishna is thinking that when I gave this Parijata flower to Rukmini, Satyabhama became so upset. Satyabhama was so upset that even when Krishna fell at the feet of Satyabhama, Satyabhama was not able to forgive Krishna. How dare you give that flower to Rukmini? Why not me? Am I not your favorite queen? What is this injustice going on like that? So she was pacified only when Krishna gave that Parijata tree directly to Satyabhama. Then only she was pacified. On the other hand, Rukmini, although Parijata tree was completely given to Satyabhama, Rukmini did not mind at all. Rukmini was very peaceful. So Krishna had won this unfulfilled desire. Will I ever be able to see anger in the face of Rukmini? Will she ever become angry on me? She is so peaceful, so sad, so composed, so loving. So I want to see some anger. So in this whole chapter, Krishna just makes an attempt, makes his own attempt, which is unsuccessful, to actually provoke Rukmini. So that did not provoke her, that made her feel so bad that she fainted. Right? In this we will see as the pastime unfolds. So right in the beginning, not much elaborate things to discuss, but still right in the beginning we would like to meditate on this quality of Krishna. Krishna is called Prabhave Sarvasattvatam. Krishna likes to glorify his devotees through his activities or whatever. Recently I was writing for our Pradipika, Bhakta Vashyata. The whole theme is Bhakta Vashyata. How Krishna is controlled by the love of his devotees. And to exhibit this quality, to manifest this quality of being controlled by his devotees, Krishna can relinquish all opulences. Thus, absolute truth lies. Bliss personified Christ, or the person who is never caught becomes caught, or someone whose waist is hardly a fist size, he will not be bound by ropes and ropes of meters and meters of rope. So like that, Krishna exhibits so many contradictions. He is Vishuddha Sattva Vigraha, peace personified, but he manifests anger, agitation. He is Aptakam, he becomes Tanyakam. So like that, Krishna manifests so many such contradictions in his activities only to bring out the glories of his devotees. He acts like a grinding stone sometimes. So just like a grinding stone, very mercilessly and ruthlessly just crushes the camphor so that the fragrance comes out. Similarly, Krishna also puts his own devotees into so much of tribulation so that their glories will come out. Bali Maharaj, recently we were discussing in the Thanda batch, Bali Maharaj has surrendered everything, whatever he has. His own guru Shukracharya suggested, "My dear Bali, as a guru, I am very much concerned about your prosperity. If you give everything to this boy, what will you have?" Of course, Shukracharya had his own motivations. But Bali Maharaj went to such an extent of denying the order of his own guru, Shukracharya, to please Krishna. He has done so much. And Vamananda very ruthlessly cheated Bali Maharaj. He expanded himself into such uses. He manifested in the like a small boy, right? My three steps, you just give. I just want 3 pieces of land with my own, on the measurement of my foot. And he gave such elaborate description of the principles of satisfaction. And you are doing a big project on it, right? So principles of satisfaction, he gave a big seminar. So someone who is not satisfied, even if he gets the entire universe, he will not be happy. He says all those dialogues, special dialogues, and then he expands himself, and in 2 steps he covers the entire universe and says, "Where is my third step?" He occupied everything and he says, "Where is my third step?" Bali Maharaj before even giving charity to Vamanadev, he prepared himself. It's not that it was a surprise to Bali Maharaj. Right, when Lord occupied everything within two steps and then asked for a third step and humiliated him, it's not a surprise to Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj kind of expected only that he might take away everything. The exact details of, oh, he will just arrest me with Varunapash, he will do this, he will do the details, I don't know, he may or may not have guessed, but he is prepared. Even if he cheats me, even if he ridicules me, even if he takes away everything in the name of three steps, I am prepared for it. My dear Sukracharya, I am prepared. That's why he's an example of Atmanivedanam. He's not called the best example of Atmanivedanam for nothing. So, but the Lord has thoroughly cheated him and humiliated him and asked, you are a liar. You said you will give me three steps and you only gave me two steps. You don't have sufficient bank balance and you gave me a check. And the check bounced. Right? I am arresting you now. Give me back. Like that he humiliated. Brahmaji had to come and take the side of Bali Maharaj. Yeah, enough. You have humiliated him thoroughly. Enough. Relax. So he doesn't deserve to be mistreated so much. Why Krishna had to do all this? Because he wanted to glorify Bali Maharaj. So then the next 10-12 verses you will see how Krishna speaks, my God, to Rukmini. What all kinds of speech that Krishna uses to tease Rukmini, we can see from 10 to 21, these 10-11 verses. So apparently it seems that he is behaving very inappropriately with Rukmini. Although she had daughters, sons, grandsons, now he says, why you married me? You could have married Jishpal only. He is a better match for you. So these kind of dialogues, right? If it is a modern, in the modern context, if the husband says like this to wife, no, wife will go to court. Wife will at least give a police complaint. Right, my husband is behaving in a strange manner, sadistic manner, this manner, that manner. All kinds of wordings they may use and then you. But Krishna is just using Rukmini like that. And Rukmini fainted, interestingly. We'll see. So here the point is, he just wanted to bring out the lovely, chaste qualities of Rukmini. That's why Krishna apparently uses such insensitive words. Right? Not that Krishna doesn't love Rukmini. This is a joking affair. So despite all these jokes, Rukmini's dedication towards Krishna was never compromised. So that's why Krishna is called Prabhavaya Sarvasatvatam. Either he would put his devotees into so much of tribulation to bring out their glories, or he himself will put himself into tribulation so that his glory of his devotee will come out. That's the classic example of Damodar Leela. Krishna was bending his head low. He is the supreme judge. He was awaiting judgment. Vaktram nineya bhaya bhavanaya stitasya. You remember that verse, Kunti Maharani's prayer. Gopyadade tvayi krutaga siddhamattava dhyate dashashru kalilanjana sambhramaksham. Vaktram nineya bhaya bhavanaya stitasya. Krishna was trembling in fear. He is breathing heavily and he is bending his head low in front of Mother Yashoda, just waiting for her judgment. You can beat me, you can throw me out of house, you can make me starve, you can bind me up, you can scold me, chastise me, you can do whatever you want, I am at your disposal. Like that Krishna says. Krishna is running away just seeing a little stick of Mother Yashoda. So all the activities, you know the details, you don't have to get into so many details. So all the surprising activities that Krishna had done in Damodar Leela, putting himself into so much of humiliation and embarrassment, only brought out the glories of Mother Yashoda. To glorify Mother Yashoda, Krishna underwent humiliation, embarrassment, so much of problem. He became like camphor, while Yashoda Mai became like grinding stone. And what fragrance came out? His quality of being Bhakta Vashyata came out. Right? That is Bhakti Baddham Bhaktair Jitattvam Bhakta Vashyata Bhritya Vashyata. These are the words that the devotees are using. So here also being controlled by the love and affection of Mother Queen Rukmini, Krishna wanted to have this joking affair. Of course, that is different, this is different. That is Vrindavan, this is Dwaraka. That is Vatsala Rasa, this is Mathuri Rasa. But the common theme is Krishna's mood of bringing out the glories of his devotees. Right? So, he does it by he himself undergoing so much of trouble or whatever. Unconventional ways he behaves. And he sometimes puts his devotees into unconventional troubles, situations. Right? Saratya Parishad Sevana Sakya Dhautya Virasanana Gamana Stavana Pranama. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he acts as a messenger or a chariot driver, as a night watchman or whatever, in various capacities. He does such menial services towards his devotees only to bring out their glories. By doing all this, he brings out their glories. So with this prelude, we will get into this chapter. Second verse. Yastetal nilaya vishvam srijatyatvatishvarah sahijatah svasetunam gopithaya yudushvajah. The unborn personality of the Godhead, the Supreme Controller, who creates, maintains and thus devours this universe simply as his play, took birth among the Yadus to preserve his own laws. So Krishna performs all these activities simply as a play. Yascha etal leelaya vishvam, leela, just as a play. Srijati atti avatishvaraha. So Srijati, he creates, Atti, he devours, Avati, he maintains or protects. So as a supreme controller, Ishvara, he does all these things in relation to this universe. So in this purport, this word, Setu, Sahi Jataha Sva Setu Naam, Setu means loss. So his own creative laws he preserves. So what is that verse? Dharma. Dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He paritrayana sadhanam. So he created this dharma. He dharmam to sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So he enacted, he prescribed the course of religion. Whenever there is a harm to that religion, whenever people are not following that religion properly, dharma, dharma samsthapanarthaya, to establish that dharma, Lord descends. That's why the word svasetunam is used. So svasetu means his own laws. He wants to protect. So religion is a law established by the Lord. The setu means, the word setu means boundary or limit, as in case of dike. Earth is raised up to both sides of the river. You know the dikes, right? In monsoon in Vrindavan, 10.20 we discussed. To keep the water within the agriculture fields, so farmers raise the boundaries, right, so that they will stay inside. That is called dike. So similarly, God also establishes laws so that people who follow them can peacefully progress along the path back home, back to Godhead. One analogy with a nice image, with dikes. So these laws, which are meant to guide human behavior, are called setu. Earth that is raised up to separate agricultural fields or to form a bridge is called setu. So thus canto 9th canto of Bhagavatam uses the word setu to indicate the bridge Ramachandra had built. Since the laws of God act as a bridge to take us from material life to spiritual life, this additional sense of word setu certainly enriches its use here. So setu naam. So Lord's supremacy or majesty and his activity, his purpose in this material creation is mentioned in the second verse. So with this background, Sukadeva Goswami begins his sweet interaction with Rukmini, because this kind of opulence related description is also needed, because what's going to happen now between Krishna and Rukmini is something that might happen in any household to a small degree or big degree, whatever. So a wife is being teased by husband, right? So Krishna is also speaking so many things like that. So why he is wasting time like that, one may think. But understand, whatever he is doing, that has a background and it has a purpose, and never minimize his position. Just because he is acting more like a human being, he cannot minimize his position. He is like this, he is mentioned. He is described in the second verse. He is the creator, he is the maintainer, he is destroyer of the entire cosmic manifestation. That's why Bhagavatam hundreds of times reminds that Krishna is the creator, maintainer and destroyer of this entire world, entire universe, so many such universes. Because we need constant reminders. Because Krishna is acting like a human being on the human platform, then it's very difficult for us to just constantly be aware that it is Krishna who is the supreme controller. Because when he is acting like a human being, we may get carried away by the feeling that, I also behave like this, he also behaves like this, many people in this world are behaving like this, Krishna is also behaving like this, what a big deal. We may get carried away. That's why so many such reminders are given. Every canto, not a single canto is without describing the Lord as creator, maintainer and destroyer. Did you notice? At least till 10th canto, every canto has it multiple times, not once, in many such prayers. He created this entire creation, and beyond this creation he exists, right, as the source of the creation, as the maintainer of creation, and as the destination of creation after this creation is wound up also, right? So when such a person does something for a little while, entering this creation during that little phase of creation, what a big thing. So we should always be reminded of this. So 3rd to 6th verse, these 4 verses describe the ambience of Queen Rukmini's palace. How she maintained her palace so wonderfully, so meticulously, in such a clean way for the pleasure of Krishna is described in these four verses. So whatever Rukmini does is only to please Krishna. So when Krishna enters her palace, the palace should look very clean and welcoming, and it should not be disgusting. As soon as they enter a place, oh my God. So if people get disgusted, they don't feel like staying in that place. Even if they come and sit there, it may be out of obligation. They are not very happy. But the ambience should actually welcome a guest. Any person who enters an ambience, enters a place, so the person who is in that place should make sure that whoever enters this place should have a nice experience. It should be giving welcome to that person. The other person should feel like, oh, I have come to my home. Or this is better than my home. So this is such a wonderful place. So that kind of ambience we should provide to the visitors. What to speak of Krishna. If Krishna is coming directly, the husband of the goddess of fortune, so how better we should clean that ambience. Same thing applies to one's own heart also. If you are inviting Krishna into our hearts, so it's the responsibility of sadhaka to regularly do his cleaning of the heart by his hearing and chanting, and by maintaining a proper consciousness and attitude. Then Krishna will come. Otherwise, itna kachra dekhe to people will get disgusted. They'll go away. They're not a very good place for us. Let's go. Like that. So Rukmini is preparing the ambience in her palace so that Krishna can be very happy sitting there. Tasmin antargrihe bhrajan मुक्ता धाम विलंबिना विराजिते वितानेन दीपैर्मणिमयैरपि मल्लिका दामभिः पुष्पैर् गिरे फकुलनादिते जालरन्ध्र प्रविष्टैश्च गोभिश्चन्द्रवसोमलैः पारिजात वनमोद वायुन् वायुनोद्यानशालिन धूपैरगरुजैराजन् जालरन्ध्रविनिर्गतैः पयः फेननिभे शुभ्रे पर्यङ्के कशिपूत्तमे उपतस्थे सुखासीनम् जगताम् ईश्वरम् पतिम्। Queen Rukmini's quarters were extremely beautiful, boasting a canopy huge with the brilliant strings of pearls as well as the effulgent jewels serving as lamps. Garlands of jasmines and other flowers hung here and there, attracting the swarms of the humming bees, and spotless rays of the moon shone through the holes of the lattice windows. As Aguru incense drifted out of the window holes, my dear king, the breeze wafting the scents of Parijata grew, carried the mood of a garden into the room. There the queen served her husband, the supreme lord of all the worlds. As he reclined upon the opulent pillow on her bed, which was as soft as and white as the foam of milk. पयः फेन निभे शुभ्रे पर्यंके कशिपुत्तमे। कृष्ण एंटर्ड सच ब्यूटिफुल पैलेस विच इज सो क्लीन एंड स्पार्कलिंग। सो ही सैट ऑन द बेड ऑन द पिल्लो विच इज एज वाइट एज फोम ऑफ मिल्क एज सॉफ्ट एज फोम एज मिल्क फोम ऑफ मिल्क लाइक दैट। सो पयः फेन निभे शुभ्रे पर्यंके कशिपुत्तमे कशिप उत्तम कशिप हिरण्यकशिप कशिप इज बेड कशिप उत्तम मीन्स बेस्ट ऑफ ऑल बेड्स दैट इज प्रोवाइडेड फॉर कृष्ण व्हेन शी व्हेन ही एंटर्ड रुक्मिणी पैलेस। उपतस्थे सुखासीनम ही वाज वेरी हैप्पीली सिटिंग एंड रिलैक्सिंग देयर। हु इज सिटिंग? जगताम ईश्वरम पतिम सेम थिंग ही यूजेस in the last first verse he used as jagat gurum next verse he made him as the creator maintainer and destroyer now he is describing him as jagatam ishwaram he is the supreme controller of the entire universe patim his husband of goddess of fortune husband of rukmini so that we don't misunderstand what's happening between them. So when a very big man cracks a joke, for example, people will generally respond to it in a more positive manner, right? For example, when a great speaker or say a sannyasi is giving class and then he just speaks a small joke or something like that in the class and entire room will laugh. A new fellow will start, say, when he is speaking, he will make a joke. People will say, did you notice? Same joke you crack. Right, brother, you don't have so much effect. Right? Because the attentiveness that a pure devotee attracts from the audience is hundreds of times more than the attentiveness that a neophyte can attract from the audience. Right? But it is very easy for us to forget the godhood of Krishna when he is acting like a human being. So Sukadeva Goswami is reminding us, he is God, he is Jagatam Prabhum, Jagatam Ishwaram, Jagat Gurum. So he is constantly reminding us so that we understand how he is a big man. Then whatever happens later, we will take it seriously. Right? Like that. It's an attempt to create seriousness. Next, seventh verse. वालव्यजनमादाय रत्नदण्डं सुखीकरात् सखीकरात् तेन विजयति देवी उपासां चक्र ईश्वरम्। From her maid servant's hand, the goddess Rukmini took a yak fan with jeweled handle. Then she began to worship her master, beckoning him. Vala vijana madaya ratna dandam sakhi karat. So ratna dandam means the handle of that vijan, that fan that she was fanning with, is bedecked with so many ratnas, jewels. So it can be wooden handle also, it can be iron handle also, it can be anything, it can be some stick. So this cleaning fellow Mohan, he takes this stick, wooden stick, and then puts some rubber band to a cloth, and then he does this dusting the walls and doors, etc. Right, the purpose is what? To dust. Okay, you don't need wooden, you don't need a very costly handle there. Same thing here, the purpose is to fan. You don't need a big handle there, right? Made of jewels and all. But it's an expression of love, right? You're offering some food to Krishna. You don't need a plate. You can offer in hand also, drone also, supari patal also, and a leaf also. But why do you put, why do you offer in such silver plates and all? And इतना बैकअप करने के लिए बहुत लोगों को लगा नहीं पड़ेगा। There are so many teakwood leaves there in GV. Just pick up any leaf and offer one bhoga. Six offering, six leaves, done. And take two. I mean, after the offering is over. That doesn't work. When you, to the extent you notice the importance of a person, to that extent you are more attentive to the details when you are serving him. Right? So our love is expressed in how much attentive we are in details. So we have a silver handle, right, for our chamar. We may not be able to afford a golden handle bedecked with so many, what to say, jewels and all. But to the best possible extent, we try to worship the Lord in an opulent way. Why every festival you need a new dress? There are so many other dresses. Why can't you offer the same thing again? Right, but we offer new dress, new jewelry every time, new garlands every day. Well, Kalka garland fresh here. After all, it is winter season. But still we offer new garlands every day. So, because he is the most important person. VIP. VVIP. I don't know, V square, V cube, or V power, 1000, 10,000 you put. IP, important person. So, that's why this Ratna Dandam Sakhi Karat. And then she began to worship her master by fanning him. Sopachyutam kvanayati mani nupurabhyam Rejenuliya valaya vyajanagrahastam Vastranta gudha kuchakumkuma shonahara भासानितंबा धर्तया चपरार्धे कंचम Her husband adorned with the rings, her hand adorned with the ring, bangles and charmer fan. Queen Rukmini looked resplendent, standing near Lord Krishna. Her jeweled ankle bells tinkled and her necklace glittered, rendered by the kumkuma from her breast, which were covered by the end of her sari. On her hips, she wore a priceless belt. Mm. So this verse describes the details of the attire of Mother Rukmini to some extent. Sopachyutam kvanati mani nupurabhyam. So Rukmini's hand is adorned with rings, bangles and chamber of hand. She could have easily told, outsourced this service to one attendant. So many maid servants are there. You do fanning. Why she has to personally fan? To the extent you feel the importance of the person whom you are serving, to that extent you will personally take part in it. अरे इतना बड़ा आदमी नहीं है, ठीक है, अब जो यू जस्ट सम न्यू फेलो यू सेंड समथिंग लाइक दैट, आर यू पुट सम अदर पर्सन, सो यू फील दैट सीरियसनेस ऑफ द पर्सन, यू विल गिव द सर्विस टू मोस्ट रिस्पॉन्सिबल पर्सन फॉर टू बी डन, और यू विल पर्सनली डू इट, राइट? सो इट्स ऑल अबाउट फीलिंग द इम्पॉर्टेंस. So now she is considering Krishna the most important. There is no one as important as Krishna for her. So why Sukadeva Goswami is describing the details of Rukmini here? You know what he says? Rejenu liya valaya vyajanagrahasta. So vyajanagrahasta. She is holding that vyajan in her hasta, in her hand, and she is looking very resplendent in that, right? You see, Queen Rukmini looked resplendent standing near Lord Krishna. So a devotee looks resplendent or beautiful only when he or she is engaged in the service of Krishna. The beauty of a devotee is in his service to Krishna, not in doing anything. So although she is adorned, her hand is adorned with rings, nice rings and bangles, but chamara fan is more, because of chamara fan she is looking even more resplendent, right? What is mentioned in the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami describes that although the hand is adorned with so many bracelets and so many other things, if that hand is not utilized in serving Krishna, that is useless. There is hands of dead body. Although eyes are so nice and there are no specs, only they are having full capacity to see objects, but still if he is unable to take darshan of Krishna, those eyes are like eyes on peacock feather, right? Plumes of peacock feather. Although one has ears, very nice, no wax inside, it's very clear, no ear problems, but still that is useless. If they are like a snake holes, if he doesn't hear about Krishna, like that. So the beauty of a devotee is not in being physically beautiful, having fair complexion, having nice hairstyle, having beautiful dress, nicely ornamented, they are all externals, but in that attire, what they are doing, their activity makes them beautiful. Here she is so heavily decorated nicely for the pleasure of Krishna, but what she is doing, she is doing chamar of Krishna. Anyone could have done it, right? So we need to get the definitions and principles correct so that we give importance to things in life as much as they deserve, right? Sometimes we place some things, we give more importance to some things and we give less importance to something else. So we need to understand which is more important, which is less important. We need to develop such proper discrimination. The bangles on my hands are not as important as the chamar in my hands with which I fan Krishna, like that. So this is more important. So Vishnu Chakurya Thakur says, Rukmini fanned her lord with broad strokes. The jewels and gold on her beautiful limbs resounded with her effort. When she is doing like that, so bangles are making sound, belt is making sound, and whatever, jewels, whatever, they are all making sound. When Yashoda Mayi is also in churning butter for Krishna, her bangles are making sound, her earrings are just moving like this. Right? So entire body is... body and ornaments that she is wearing, they were making sounds in accompaniment with her singing. It is all in service to Krishna. So Rukmini is also serving like this. Rasa is different, place is different, but the mood is devotion. Mood is servitorship, like that. Ninth verse. Tam rupinim shriyamananya gatim nirikshya. Ya nilaya dhatatano ranu rupa rupa. Prita hasmayan alakakundalan निष्कंठ वक्त्रोल्लसत् स्मित सुधाम हरिराम भासे। As he contemplated her, the goddess of fortune herself, who desires only him, Lord Krishna smiled. The Lord assumed the various forms to enact his pastimes, and he was pleased that the form the goddess of fortune had assumed was just suitable for her to serve his concern. Her charming face was adorned with curling hair, wearing a locket on her neck, and the nectar of her bright, happy smile. The Lord then spoke to her as follows. So tam rupinim shriyam ananya gatim nirikshya. So Krishna looked at her. She is ananya gatim. She has no other goal in life other than serving Krishna. The only goal, the only purpose of her life is to render service to Krishna. Ananya gatim nirikshya. Krishna said, ya lilaya. As a pastime, he has seen dhritatanor anurupa rupa. Dhritatanor anurupa rupa means Krishna accepts tanu, various bodies. Anurupa rupa means in alignment with the desires of his devotees. Yadya dhyata urugaya vibhavayanti tattatva buho pranayase saganugrahaya. Anurupa rupa. So Krishna presents himself in various forms to enact various pastimes to please his devotees. So here he had assumed some form which was just suitable for her to serve as his consort. Now he assumes some other form. She may not feel like serving him, because the mood and ambience are also very important. Right? So he assumed a form suitable to receive her service according to the mood. So why Krishna takes the trouble of doing something or manifesting something to align himself to the mood of his devotees? Because devotees are always inclined to align themselves with the mood of Krishna. There is a constant sacrificing spirit between Krishna and his devotees. Their only motive is to align oneself with the will or desire or need of the beloved. That is the attitude of Krishna towards his devotees. That is the attitude of devotees towards Krishna. They think about each other. They have no other thoughts. Snigdheshu pandushu jagat pranatim cha vishnor. Why Krishna has become sarathya, parishada, sevana, sakhya, dautya, virasana, anugamana, stavana, pranaman? Because snigdheshu pandushu. Pandavas are malleable to the will of Krishna. Krishna has become malleable to their needs. Because somebody comes, I want prasad. And poor mother Draupadi, she did not have any food to feed only. She was in anxiety. Pandavas were in anxiety. So Krishna has come, ate one grain and relieved her of her anxiety. Like that, wherever there is a need, he will come and present himself. Krishna, why he has to come all the way? No. Some grahastha is unable to feed his guest. Krishna will not go to every grahastha like that. Some household is unable to feed his or her guest. Why Krishna has to take responsibility for it personally? So Krishna just, wherever he just manifests there to assist Draupadi. Why? Because she is devotee. She is malleable to will of Krishna. Krishna is also malleable to her needs. Right? Like that. Anurupa rupa, prita hasmayan, alaka kundala nishka kantha. So Krishna was looking at her charming face adorned with alaka kuntala, like curling hair around her beautiful face, earrings, locket on her neck, and the nectar of her bright happy smile. Right, vaktrola sat smita sudham harirava bhasi. So just like Krishna is often described, his smile is described, his ornaments are described, his curly hair is described. Sometimes devotees are also described like that. Shaumam vasaha prutukatate, prutukatitate vibhrati sutranadham. Like that Yashodama is described in great detail in the beginning of Damodar Lila. Here Rukmini is described in great detail. Right. Sukadeva Goswami is described in great detail. Guru Maharaj is described in great detail. Devahuti was described in great detail, her beauty and others. So Bhagavatam is a composition of the glories of devotees and Krishna also. Right? Hari Avabhasi, Krishna started speaking to her. Now, so when the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes the form of a demigod in this world for whatever reason, the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, she takes the form of a demigoddess. When Krishna descends as a human being, then the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, she descends as a human being, aligns herself with the needs and moods of her husband. That's what is happening here. Krishna is even more beautiful than the Lord of Vaikuntha. So Krishna's concert Rukmini Devi is more attractive than Goddess of Fortune. And Krishna in Vrindavan is more attractive than Krishna in Dwaraka. So gopis of Vrindavan are more attractive and more innocent and sweet and simple and greater than queens of Dwaraka. So there are three categories of Lord Shaktis. So you know those Shaktis, but in terms of consorts, Kaviraj Goswami mentions them as Gopi Gana, Lakshmi Gana, Mahishi Gana. Gopi Gana means the damsels of Vrindavan. Mahishi Gana means queens of Dwaraka. Lakshmi Gana means goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha. So that is the order of gradation. Gopis are superior to queens. Queens are superior to goddesses of fortune in Vaikuntha. This is the order. Similarly, Krishna in Vrindavan is a greater manifestation of the absolute truth. Krishna in Dwaraka is next. And Krishna in Vaikuntha as Vishnu is next, right, in gradation. Now Krishna started speaking. Let's see what he says. So Yashoda, Rukmini is serving him personally, although there are so many devotees, so many maid servants. So Krishna is very much attracted by her loving devotion. Just like Gurudeva Maharajan, anyone can do. Anyone can clean. Jhadu Pocha, everyone can do. But why Lord Chaitanya is taking personally the leadership of managing it? See, at someone at that level, he need not come so down and to do cleaning and all. Right? And he is coordinating cleaning service. Even here also, after few years, in ashram life, we don't feel like taking much interest in cleaning. Is it not? Yeah, this is a department. But Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, he cleans every bit of this Gundicha temple, and he sets targets for his devotees and inspires them, and he says that whoever collects more dust, I consider him a great servant. Whoever collects less dust, they have to pay less dust, they have to pay a fine of feeding prasad, mahaprasad to other devotees. Something like that he says in Gundicha Bhajan, 12th chapter, Madhya Leela. You know? Like that. So he sets targets there. He does so much of, he goes into such fine details of cleaning. First one level of cleaning, second level of cleaning, and then he takes his own cloths to clean the dust particles between the two tiles, and like that he just picks up the dust. So seeing him, all others also, they take their own cloths and they start cleaning. Right? And he says, Krishna, Krishna, whatever he wants. Other devotees also say, Krishna, Krishna, Hari, Hari, like that. So entire Gundicha temple is filled with the vibrations of Krishna, Krishna, like that. So sometimes one should do some activities which are ordinarily below his position. Right? No one will expect him to do such a small task or menial task or simple task which anyone else can do. But the greatest pleasure of a devotee, however exalted he may be, however advanced he may be, however experienced he may be, is in doing such simple activities only, as it is revealed in various episodes of Bhagavatam. Although so many maid servants are there, Rukmini is personally fanning Krishna. Although thousands of maid servants are there, Yashoda was personally churning butter for Krishna. Although hundreds and lakhs of devotees are there, Mahaprabhu is personally cleaning Gundicha temple. although so many ministers and so many soldiers are there, Pratap Pratap Maharaj is personally doing jhadu pocha, jhadu of that Pandu Vijaya ceremony, and Gajagannath is being brought to Ratha, right? So like that, one needs to not artificially think that I don't have to do certain small tasks or menial tasks. That's the greatest pleasure, right, of a devotee. So what pleases Krishna, that I will do. If it is big or small, that's a detail. What is more important is pleasing Krishna, right? You see in Govardhan Puja episode, Govardhan Puja, in every Kartik Yatra, you will be participating. Half of you will be in Govardhan Puja. So even Maharaj also cooks, Dadanand Maharaj cooks, and many, many senior devotees also cook. To make samosa, anyone can make samosa. But why such busy people also have to come and make samosa? So like that. Next, 10 to 21. Krishna is teasing Rukmini. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Raja Putri Sita Bhupair Lokapala Vibhuti Bhi Mahanubhavaihi Sri Madhi Rupaudarya Balorjitaihi. The Supreme Lord said, my dear princess, you were sought after by many kings as powerful as the rulers of planets. They were all abundantly endowed with political influence, wealth, beauty, generosity and physical strength. Okay. First point, first argument Krishna gives as a part of his teaching. That is, Raja Putri. Oh, princess, Rajaputri. Rajaputri means the princess, the daughter of the king. Oh, Rajaputri, Ipsita Bhupaihi, Pala Vibhuti Bhi. You were sought, Ipsita means desiring. Your hand was desired by so many such great Lokapala, so many rulers, so many kings, like Shishupal and many other people were looking after you. You were sought by many powerful rulers who had political influence. Mahanubhavaihi Srimad Bhi. Mahanubhavai means very influential people. Srimad Bhi, very opulent people. Rupa Audarya Bala Urjitaihi, who are very beautiful. Audarya, who are very generous. Bala, who had physical strength. Urjitahe, they are abundantly endowed with all these things. So although you were desired by so many such great people, why did you marry me? Right, that was his first argument. Rukmini counters this argument later. So now she hears all this patiently and she will faint. And Krishna will wake her up and then, I didn't mean it, I'm sorry, please don't do like this. I didn't mean to cause any trouble to you. I was just joking only, like that he says. Then Rukmini very systematically smashes all the arguments given by Krishna that we will see in the second half of the chapter. Now we'll see only Krishna's arguments. 11th verse. Tan praptan arthino hitva chidyadin smaradurmadan datta bhatra svapitra ca kasmanno vavrishe saman. Since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chiri and all those other suitors who stood before you maddened by the cupid? Why instead did you choose us who are not at all your equal? Tan prapta narthito hitva. So just to obtain you as being their only purpose, Chidyagin, so many kings headed by Chidya. Chidya is this fellow, Shishupal. Smara Durmadan. Smara means Cupid. Durmadan means very badly intoxicated by Cupid. So Cupid makes one stupid. So this is captioned by Gauram Prabhu for Ajamil episode. I just remembered it. So Smara Durmadan. They were all maddened with lust, maddened by the Cupid. So they were behind you. Datta, Bhratra, Swapitra cha, and your Bhratra, your Bhratra Rukmi, and your Pita, who is that Bhishmaka. So all of them desire to give you in marriage to this Rukmi, this Chaitya Shishupal. So, Kasmano Vagrishe Saman, Asman, how did you leave all of them and then come to me? So it was her decision, her independent decision. It was not done with approval of his her authorities, her caretakers, her elder brother, nor her father. Just planned for marriage of Rukmini with Krishna. Definitely Bhishma was favorable more towards Krishna, but he was also applauded by Rukmini's words. So it is her own decision that she just secretly sent a message through a Brahmana to Krishna. When Krishna came and kidnapped her. That's how it happened. So why did you desire me? You know, all the girls are qualified. Now what is your disqualification? If someone asks, Krishna will say, he will enumerate why he is not suitable. Right? First he said that there were so many other suitable people who can marry you. Now how I am not suitable, he will say in the later verses. Rajabhyo bhyata subhrum.
Rajabhyo bhyata subhrum.
Samudram sharanam gatan, balavadbhih kritadveshan, tesam prayastyakta rupasanan. Terrified of these kings, O loved God One, we took shelter in the ocean. We have become enemies of powerful men and we practically abandoned our royal throne. Okay. So he said that terrified by these kings, we took shelter in the ocean. First disqualification. When Jarasandha, Kalyana, all these people were coming and trying to attack us, I just ran away. I took shelter in the ocean and made Dwarka fort and then I was hiding here. So I am like that, I am a coward. Second, we have become enemies of powerful men. We had so many enemies. Someone who is under our protection has to be constantly in anxiety because I had so many enemies. Right? So it is said that a father who is a debtor is an enemy because son is obliged to fulfill all those debts. So like that, when you take shelter of a dependent person, right, when you depend on a person who he has so many obligations, your life will not be very peaceful. Right? Especially in matches it is seen. For example, if the boy has some disease, the girl's parents would not be inclined to give the girl to the boy. If the boy has so many debts, girl's parents will not do. If the boy is not very well situated, he doesn't have very proper bona fide source, financial source income source, then they will not give. So like that they will, generally people would not prefer a person who is involved with so many shortcomings or especially enemies and court cases, vagara vagara. So he is very good. He has some 2-3 court cases going on. We'll add you a remote guy to him. Yeah. He is very good, but police have been searching with him. He was not caught till now, but police department is very fervently searching for him. Will any man would try to give his daughter to such a person? So Krishna says, Samudran Saranam Gatan, we have taken Sharan of Samudra. Second, Balavadbhihi Krita Dveshan, we have created enmity with Balavadbhihi, very powerful people. He had so many enemies, generally Kshatriya when he had so many enemies, it's like very good thing for him. So it's not a very big thing to think before marrying, but he is Balavadbhihi Krita Dveshan. Balavadbhihi means very powerful kings, apparently more powerful than us. That's how Krishna presents. So I have created enmity with such powerful people, not some anybody. Prayas Tyakta Nrupashrayan. So Tyakta Nrupashrayan means we have practically abandoned our royal throne. Prayah means almost, right? So, but they have their positive meanings. Although Krishna is presenting himself like this very humbly. So, samudram sharanam gatan. So, samudram sharanam gatan means Krishna actually takes shelter of the ocean of love in the hearts of his devotees. That is samudram sharanam gatan. Next line he says, balavad bhihi kratat deshan. Balavad bhihi means the senses, the material senses are so strong, they are balavadhi. Kratat deshan. Krishna is against the strong material senses. Prayas tyaktan rupasanam. We have almost abandoned our royal throne, he says like that. We are not kings. What does it mean? He is self-satisfied. He doesn't need any thrones. So there are positive meanings for all this, but Krishna is humbling himself like that in front of Queen Rukmini. Why he is teasing? I mentioned right in the beginning of the class only, because Krishna never saw anger of Rukmini. Krishna only saw her in a very peaceful attire. So Krishna wanted to provoke her so that she becomes angry and then he can have darshan of her anger, at least for some time. Next, Krishna opposed so many of the contemporary kings during his incarnation, befriending only a few, such as Pandavas. Of course, as stated in the beginning of 10th canto, Krishna appeared specifically because he wanted to reduce the burden of this overburdened Mother Earth. So why she is overburdened? There are so many demoniac kings. If so many kings are demoniac, Krishna has enmity with so many people. Simple logic. Balavad bhihi. Obviously, there are only few people who are righteous. And Krishna is friends with only few people. There are so many people who are not righteous, Krishna is enemies with them. That's why the number of enemies of Krishna are more. There is nothing to be astonished there. So, we have practically given up throne means that he humbly has given up throne and made his grandfather Ugrasena sit. He defeated Kamsa. He killed Kamsa. He can also easily sit on the throne, but he did not sit. He made Ugrasena sit that way. That only shows his detachment and the spirit of being self-satisfied and nothing shortcoming. So for ordinary people, all these things are very humbling and humiliating. They are faults. They are seen as faults for other people. Just running away from enemy, taking shelter of some fort in the middle of the water somewhere, creating enmity with some strong people, giving up throne, ruling position. They are considered faults in ordinary people, but these are considered very special ornaments when Krishna exhibits them. Okay. As in Damodar Leela, right in the beginning, Acharyas clarify that there are 18 faults in a human being, but when Krishna exhibits these 18 faults, Ram exhibits these faults, they are special ornaments in his character, because he does it with his love for his devotees. Second verse. Aspashtavatmanam pumsam aloka pathamiyusham asthitah padavim subhrum prayah sidante yoshitah.
Oh, fine broad one, women are easily destined to suffer when they stay with a man whose behavior is uncertain and who pursue a path not approved by society.
So, as we discussed earlier also, when you take shelter of a person who is already in suffering, who is already in so many problems, he can only expect problems, nothing more. So aspashta vartmanam, Krishna is describing himself as aspashta vartmanam. My behavior is totally uncertain, it's not spashta, it's aspashta. So when women take shelter of a person whose behavior is uncertain, then what will happen? They will only suffer. Right? Aloka patham iyusham. Aloka patham means not acceptable to the ordinary society. Lokapatham means what is approved by the society, what is sanctioned by the society. what is commonly seen as a conventional behavior in the society. So it's uncommon. Now, for example, someone just takes this dhoti and then just puts on like this and takes his kurta and then puts like a gamcha around and then he goes out. It's unconventional, is it? Kurta has to be above, he has to be below. If you extend the rules, it's unconventional, right? Someone will start walking with hands, not legs. Unconventional, right? It's aloka patham. So Krishna also says that aloka patham yusham. When we accept something which is not the common social behavior, approved social behavior, and it is uncertain, aspashta, then you will have to face troubles only. Astitaha paravim subhru prayaha siddhanti yushitaha. So how can you expect any happiness? So in this verse, Krishna gives another argument. So he has given total 5-6 arguments till now. In the 10th verse he said, you are sought by so many people, rulers. 11th verse he said, why did you not choose them? And why did you choose me? Right? I am not equal to you in qualifications. What are my disqualifications? 12th verse he says, number one, I am a coward. I am cowardly. I ran away. Second, I have created enmity with so many opposite kings, strong people. Third, we have abandoned royal throne. Now fourth, he says, I have uncertain behavior, unpredictable behavior, uncommon behavior, improper behavior, which is not approved by the society. Right? So it is not approved by the society. Next, 14th verse he says, Nishkinchana vayam sasvan Nishkinchana janapriya Tasmat prayena nahiyadhya Mam bhajanti sumadhyame Nishkinchana vayam sasvan. Nishkinchana means one who do not have any possessions. Vayam sasvan, we are always without any possessions. I have no possessions, eternally, not just now. Anytime I never possess anything. Second, Nishkinchana Janapriyaha. I am very dear to the poor people who do not have possessions. I don't have possessions. People who approach me, they all also do not have possessions. I am like a, what is that called, bankrupt person who do not have a care of address. Right, I am like that. He says, Tasman prayana nahi adhya mam bhajanti sumadhyama. Therefore, sumadhyama means a thin waisted one. What kind of happiness you will achieve by worshipping me? Mam bhajanti, what you will get by worshipping me? He says, Nishkinchana janapriya, I am dear to only people who do not have any possessions. I am of that category. So Krishna is saying here the common aspect between him and his devotees. He is Nishkinchana, his devotees are also Nishkinchana. They are not inclined to enjoy on a material plane. That's why both are called Nishkinchana. So both of them are disinclined or uninterested in material sense gratification. Both of them are inclined for a superior pleasure on a spiritual platform. That's why both can be called Nishkinchana. Nishkinchanasya Bhagavan Bhajanonmukhasya Param Param Jigimisho Bhavasagarasya. So that is Nishkinchana devotees. Akinchana Gocharam. 15th verse. Yayor Atma Samam Vittam Janmaishwarya Kritir Bhavaha Tayor Vivaho Maitricha Nottama Dharma Yoh Kuchit. And he gives some quotes of marriage. Read the translation.
Marriage and friendship are proper between two people who are equal in terms of their wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance and capacity for good progeny, but never between a superior and inferior.
In the previous verse, one more point is there. Krishna says that I am not wealthy, and my devotees are not wealthy, and those who are wealthy, they are not inclined to worship me. Right? Wealthy people hardly ever worship me. That also he says. In this verse, he explains the codes of marriage. Right? What are they? Yayor Atma Samam Vittam. Atma Samam means someone who is on the same level as me. Right? Same position. Marriage, friendship, all this should be done between equals. Equals in what? Vittam. Vittam means wealth. Equal in wealth. Janma, equal in birth. Aishwarya, equal in opulence. Akriti, equal in form. Right. But now things may not happen. Someone is a human form, he makes friendship with dog form or cat form, and he has a dispute with other humans. Like that. So Atma Samam. So tayor vivaho maitri cha, vivaha or maitri, marriage or friendship has to be done between equals, who are equal in all these things. Equal in wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance, good progeny, etc., etc. Never between superior and inferior. Na uttama adhama yoha kuchit. This is also a general principle you can take, whoever is collecting general principles, social behavior. I think you can take in Varnashram, one of you. This may be useful. So, regularly, in general, marriage or friendship is between equals of these things. Not uttama and adhama. You cannot have friendship with someone, generally you cannot have friendship with someone who is very elder to you, very younger to you, or because they cannot relate with each other properly. They cannot understand each other's needs or tastes, etc. Right? So what a 50-year-old person undergoes in terms of his emotions or physical needs, another 50-year-old person can easily understand. Or at the max, beyond 45 or up to 55, something like that. There will be some range. But a 20-year-old boy can never actually understand what a 50-year-old man can go through. Right? He may theoretically understand. So that way, that's how this is mentioned. So, now persons of inferior and superior qualities also may live together in relationship of master and servant. The person of inferior quality may serve a person of superior quality. So, master-servant relationship is possible. Superior-subordinate relationship is possible. Teacher-student relationship is possible. Guru-disciple relationship is possible between superiors and inferiors. But when it comes to friendship and marriage, there should be some equality. Right? Vivaha and Maitri. These two have to be done in a equal, someone of equal status. So, for example, a poor man brings a girl of very high sophisticated family as his wife. And she is not AC. AC kya? We are in hut. Right? When winter comes, there is AC for us. I want heater. When summer comes, there is heater for us. There is no separate arrangement. That's what he will say. He is staying in hut, right? She cannot handle it. Because she is coming from a very wealthy family. And now a king marries, say, a Sudra girl or someone who is just doing some very menial task of cleaning in different people's house, for example, from that family, he just takes. And he will put her on the throne. You are my queen from today. And then she will start doing jhadu pocha in the palace. Right? Or she will do something else. She will start washing utensils in her kitchen. And all her servants say, oh, queen, queen, Maharani, Maharani, you don't do all this. They will say. It's like a shock. Right? Someone who is coming from different background cannot gel with another person who is having another background. So someone of equal status is preferred, right? For Maitri and Vivaha, right? That's what Krishna says. These are codes of marriage. Here Krishna is presenting himself as a materially unqualified person. In fact, Lord does not have any material qualities. In that sense, Krishna is correct only. He lives in his pure spiritual existence. Thus all the Lord's opulences are eternal and not of the flimsy, mundane sort. 16th verse. Vaidarbhyetat avignayam. vritavayam tvayadir ghasamikshaya vritavayam gunarhina bhikshubhi slaghita muda.
Oh, Vaidavi, not being farsighted, you didn't realize this, and therefore you chose us as your husband. Even though we have no good qualities and are glorified only by deluded beggars.
So in the 16th verse, Krishna is saying that I am glorified only by deluded beggars. Avignaya tvaya dirgha samikshaya. Adirgha samikshaya means without long-range vision. Adirgha samikshaya. They don't have a long-term vision. They are narrow-minded, something like that. Vritaha vayam gunaihi heenaha bhikshubihi shlakhitaihi muda. So only bhikshus, only beggar kind of category people, such people without having a far sight, without having a broader vision, adirgha samikshaya. So such people, you do not realize this, and therefore you choose your husband even though we have no good qualities and are glorified only by deluded beggars. So here that not having far sight is being applicable to Rukmini here, 16th verse. So you are not having a long term vision because you did not realize the difference. You chose me unnecessarily. I have no good qualities and I am also glorified by only some deluded beggar kind of people. Right? I don't have many great qualities. 17th verse. Athātmanonuprūpam vai bhajasvaha kṣatiyar shabham yenatvam āśiśaha satya ihamutra jalapsite.
Now you should definitely accept a more suitable husband, a first-class man of the royal order who can help you achieve everything you want, both in this life and in the next.
So you should accept a more suitable man. Now he is saying all this, although she has spent a lot of time with him. Okay, first class man of royal order who can help you achieve everything you want, both in this life and in the next life. Okay? Like that Krishna started teasing Rukmini. So why Krishna married Rukmini then? Now, Krishna is blaming Rukmini that you have chosen me in a wrong way, I have these disqualifications and they have those many qualifications. So he says that from her perspective. From your perspective, if you know, if you are aware that you are not a proper match for me, why did you marry me? Rukmini may say. She doesn't say. So that's why Sekhar also doesn't put that kind of argument. But from Krishna's side, he is presenting his argument. Why did I marry you in the first place? Answer is here, 18th verse. Two verses he says, two reasons, in 18th and 19th verses. Chaidyasyalva jarasandha dantavakradayo nrupaha mamadhyashanti vamoru rukmicha pitavagrujaha. He says, Chaidya, Shalva, Jarasandha, Dantavakra, Nadayo Nrupaha. There are so many such kings. So mama dvishanti vamoru. Vama uru means a beautiful third one. Basically, while putting forward his arguments, Krishna is also praising the beauty of Rukmini. Limb by limb, he is just praising her beauty also. So mama dvishanti, all these kings, they hate me. Rukmi chapitava agrajaha, your agraja, your elder brother Rukmi also hates me. So what is he trying to say? I married you because my enemies are desiring you. Because I have enmity towards them, I married you. So my marriage, the reason for me marrying you is not out of love for you, just because I have enmity with those kings who wants to get you, like that. So he made love secondary and made his enmity primary, rajamiti or whatever. Sometimes marriages happen in kshatriya families out of whatever is called rajaniti or whatever. To make friendship with other kingdoms, they have marriages. To break relationship with other kingdoms, they do something else. To make an inimical king favorable towards oneself, they, get into marriage, relationship, and then become family members. Or to show off in front of enemies, they may marry. Or to create more enmity, they may marry. So all the, these are all general kshatriya tendencies. Sometimes they are seen. So Krishna says like that. Second reason he gives. Kesham virya marandhanam duktanam smayan mutaye anitasi mayadhat bhadre tejoba harastasasam. I was to dispel the arrogance of these kings that I carried you away, my good woman, for they were blinded by intoxication of power. My purpose was to curb the strength of the wicked. I have enmity with them and I wanted to humble them. I wanted to crush their pride. That's the reason why I married you. Not that you have written me love letter, this and that. Right? Only to humble them, I married you. Like that. Udasina vayam nunam. Nastriya priyartha kamuka. Nastriya patyartha kamuka. Atmalo la atmalabhyasmahe purna. Gehayo arjyotira kriya. We care nothing. Udasin. Udasin means we are indifferent, detached people. So vayam nunna, stri means wives, apatya children, artha wealth, kamukaha, kamuka means one who is desirous of, hankering for. So we don't hanker for these wives, children and wealth. We are totally detached. We are udasin. So atmalabhya means whatever comes on its own, that we just merely witness it. Right? We are self-satisfied people. Atmalabhya asmahe purana. We think ourselves complete with whatever we have. Right? We don't need anything. We don't hanker or we don't endeavor for anything else. So apparently it seems that I have taken a lot of trouble to to come all the way to Kundinapur and kidnap you as if I am desirous of you, as if I am hankering for your association. No, nothing like that. Kuch bhi nahi. I don't have any such feelings in me. Right? I am self-satisfied, he says. We do not work for body and home, but like light, we merely witness things. Like that Krishna teased Rukmini in various ways. Now Rukmini's response we will see. 21st verse. Sri Shuka Uvacha Etavadutva Bhagavan Atmanam Vallabhamidam Manyamanam Avishleshat Tattarpa Dhana Uparamat.
Sri Goswami said, Rukmini had taught herself especially beloved by Lord because he never left her company. By saying these things to her, he vanquished her pride and then he stopped speaking.
Now this is a very important and very high principle which is often mentioned in Bhagavatam, that apart from the sweet exchanges that Krishna is having with his devotees, he notices the very subtle, slight tinge of pride that his devotees might have. It could be devotees in Madhurya Rasa, devotees in Dasya Rasa, or devotees of any category, Dharaka, Vrindavan, Mathura, wherever, Vaikuntha, wherever. He cannot tolerate pride in his devotees. So Rukmini had a very slight tinge of pride in her that she serves Krishna so nicely and she is a kind of a favorite queen of Krishna. Like that feeling is there to very slight degree. Krishna wanted to crush her pride in this way, through this. Definitely it's being enacted at different levels, but one of the reasons is this. Mohini Murti bewildered Shiva, definitely that's a glorification of Shiva, but Shiva also was slightly proud. He had a little confidence that so many demigods are this Mohini Murti, they are not captivated, why would I be captivated? Brahmaji had a slight tinge of pride. So he said, okay, let me have a game with Krishna. Let me just make his boys and calves disappear for a while. Let me hide them. Let's see. Let me see what he will do. Indra became proud. Krishna subdued his pride by lifting Govardhan. And gopis were slightly proud during the Rasalila, midst of Rasalila. Proud of what? Proud of having such intimate association of Krishna. That's privilege, reciprocation with Krishna. So Krishna disappeared from the scene. So like that, Chitrapati had pride. He was thinking that I got such personal association and reciprocation from Lord Sankarshan, I can give a feedback to Shiva also, that too publicly, loudly, repeatedly. So that pride was crushed through Mother Parvati's curse. So Krishna cannot tolerate pride. This is one thing we need to constantly remind ourselves. And in our devotional life, there is a lot of scope to become proud. Especially in ISKCON, so much of glorification. Culture is very good, definitely. Culture of appreciation is there, culture of respect is there. When someone does something good, different devotees will come and glorify. And there are so many devotees around also. It's not one or two people around. In a family, there are probably people. Mother, father, husband, wife, son, daughter, grandmother, grandfather, something like that. The family, the scope of the family, the amount of glorification that you may receive in a family is limited. But the amount of glorification that you receive in this setup, where 30 students are in this batch only, get the other batch, get this tool, that tool, you go and sing one kirtan, then if it happens to be good, there are so many people who can come and glorify you. Give one class, if it happens to be good, happens to impress few people, they'll come and glorify left, right, center. So the only one formula that you can take is don't take glorification seriously. That doesn't mean considering it void and being impersonal, being totally indifferent, that's not the point. But don't take it to the heart. Whatever is needed to reciprocate with the other devotee who is genuinely appreciating you, so that you may do in a humble manner, but not disappointing or discouraging such person who is genuinely expressing some appreciation, and take it as an encouragement and improve your service only. But if we take it into our head, then Krishna has to take the trouble of humbling us in various ways. Don't increase Krishna's service. Increase your service to Krishna. If we try to increase Krishna's service, then we will only be embarrassed. Krishna does service in such a way that we come back to senses. Better we are more alert. So maybe we can make a list of these thematic components. Just now I recollected some examples. Gopis, Chitraketu, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, Rukmini. Six examples we mentioned. No? Huh? ISKCON. ISKCON, you gave it. Shastri Golo. Huh? Sorry? Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj and Sudama, they are also. That's a very special tinge. That Bali Maharaj is thinking that I am a very charitable person. And Sudama is saying I am a very detached person. So Krishna just humbled both of them, one by making one person pauper, for making another person that very wealthy person. Anything else? 8 examples. How Guru? Arjuna. How? It is more on the separation there. I don't know if it is. In all those purports, I never saw a word pride there. I don't remember. That is an example for pride. If you find any specific statement from any acharya, you can let me know. Other places it is mentioned. Pride is mentioned. Arjuna is mainly feeling bad for the separation, because of separation, not that his pride is crushed. He gave that as an example. He is not there, my powers are lost, but Krishna made him like that just to humble him. Aisa kuch hai kya? You can just check. And anything else? That you may say. That also is circumstantial. Nothing deep rooted. But okay, one good thing. Hanumanji Bhima, okay, fine. Anything else? Okay, we can collect. Okay, more. That's a different thing. Devotee spread, we are saying. Devotee himself becomes proud slightly. Krishna will do the needful. Something else also we were discussing that sometime back. Many examples of Krishna trying to glorify his devotees. Bali Maharaj, in the beginning of the class we were discussing Bali and all the Bali. Devahuti. Beauty was glorified, that's one thing. And glorifying the devotees, increasing their influence by grinding camphor, that kind of thing. That also you can take as an assignment. Next, anything else? Anything else we discussed? I'm not recollecting, we discussed certainly one thing. Where so many examples are there.
Personality serving.
Correct, that is one good example. That also you take. See, Yashoda Mai was serving menial service. Prataparudra Maharaj was doing menial service. Yashoda Mai was doing menial service. Although they could have outsourced. Then Lord Chaitanya was doing Gundichamarjan. Rukmini was doing chamber. Four examples. Any other examples? I think I mentioned a little more. Lakshmi, Sri Rupini, Kanayati, Charanaravindam. Okay. When you have subordinates or younger people who can do that simpler and menial service, you yourself took up that service. Okay, that examples we want. Shastric examples. That Krishna himself does it. Anything else? Any other examples? When 30 brains come together, we get more examples. Only one brain thinks, we get less examples. Krishna receives Sudama Brahman and many other Brahmanas, although he could have done it to someone. He does chamar also for Sudama. Anything else? Rajasri was sacrifice. Wonderful example. Correct. That is fine. Okay. Anything else? Bhishma? I didn't get it. That's okay. How is it relevant? Okay, no problem. Fine, if you recollect, you just make a bigger list. Okay? Thematic compilation. Tomorrow, by tomorrow. Because not much to memorize for you. Today afternoon the chapter will become very easy. Next, iti trilokesha pates tadatmanah.
Iti trilokesha pates tadatmanah.
Priya
यस्य देव्यः श्रुतपूर्वम् अप्रियम् आश्रित्य भीता हृदि जातवेपतु चिन्ताम्बुरन्ताम् रुदति जगामः. गॉडेस रुक्मिणी हैड नेवर बिफोर हर्ड सच अनप्लेजेंट ट्रीज फ्रॉम हर बिलव्ड द लॉर्ड ऑफ द यूनिवर्सल रूलर्स एंड शी बिकेम फ्राइटेड. अ ट्रेमर अरोज इन हार्ट एंड टेरिबल एंग्जाइटी शी बिगैन टू क्राई. ओके सो दिस इज द रिएक्शन ऑफ रुक्मिणी. इन टेरिबल एंग्जाइटी शी बिगैन टू क्राई चिंता दुरंतम रुदती जगामः. रुदती मीन्स शी स्टार्टेड क्राइंग. So Krishna starts crying and glorifies Mother Yashoda. Here Krishna makes Rukmini cry to glorify her, right, her devotion that way. Next, Padasu Jatena Nikha Nakha Runashriya Bhavam Likhanja Shruhiranja Sashita आशिंचति कुंकुमरूषितौस्तनौ तस्थावधौ मुख्यति दुःखरुद्धवाक्. With a tender foot, effulgent with the lady's glow of her nails, she scratched the ground, and tears darkened by her eye makeup sprinkled her kumkum radiant wrist. There she stood face downward, her voice choked up by extreme sorrow.
Pada sujatena nakharuna shriya bhuvam likhanti. So pada with her foot, bhuvam likhanti means she started writing on the ground. Gopis also did it. And Devuti also did it. Anyone else who has done? So ladies and are very sorrowful and anxious, no? They start writing with their toes on the ground. What they write, we don't know, but they write. So that's a... Tuti also does it? I don't remember. Okay, if we can find a reference. Devuti does it in front of Kardama. So like that. So that is her reaction. Tasyahasu dukha bhayashoka तस्यासु दुःख भयशोक विनष्ट बुद्धेर हस्ताचल हस्ताचलर्थ वलयतो विदनं पपात देहश्च विक्लव धियः सहसैव मुह्यम् रम्भेर वातु विहतो प्रवितीर्यस् केशान्
रुक्मिणी's mind was overwhelmed with unhappiness, fear and grief. Her bangles slipped from her hand and her pan fell to ground. In her peeled mane she suddenly fainted. Her hair scattering all about her body fell to the ground like a plantain tree blown over by the wind.
There is a fierce wind, peaceful collapse, like that. As Krishna is speaking verse after verse, like this, this Rukmini, her mind was overwhelmed. Tasyah sudukha, very unhappy. Bhaya shoka vinashta buddhir. She is overwhelmed with fear, lamentation, vinashta buddhir. And losing her intelligence. Hasta chala dvyalato vizanam papata. She was holding this vision, that jewel-studded, what is that? Dandam. Ratna dandam, that vision. So that slipped from her hands. But she could not handle this. She suddenly fainted. So these are all ecstatic symptoms of grief, out of her intense affection and love for Krishna. Right? So these are not any low feelings, right? Tadrishtva Bhagavan Krishna Priyayaha Prema Bandhanam Hasya Prodhim
ajanantya karunahasonvakampatam. Seeing that his beloved was so bound to him in love, that is prema bandhanam. Prema bandhanam. Whenever Krishna is bound, he is bound by love. No other force in the entire cosmic manifestation has the power to bind Krishna. The only thing, the only rope that can bind Krishna is love of his devotee. Prema bandhanam. This is the bandhan, bondage. No other bondage than Krishna. Hasya praudhim. Hasya praudhim. So basically he wanted to make some joke, wanted to tease, do some hasya. But now she fainted. Karuna hasya anvakampata. He was overwhelmed with compassion. As she was overwhelmed with unhappiness and anxiety and fell down, Krishna is now overwhelmed with compassion and trying to take care of her. He manifests two extra hands also to hold her. The Lord quickly got down from the bed, manifesting four arms. He picked her up, gathered her hair and caressed her face with his lotus hand. Read the next translation. 27 and 28 translation.
Wiping her tear-filled eyes on her breast, which were stained by tears of grief, the Supreme Lord, the goal of his devotees, embraced his chaste wife, who desired nothing but him. O King, expert in the art of pacification, Sri Krishna tenderly consoled pitiable Rukmini, whose mind was bewildered by his clever joking and who did not deserve to suffer so.
So, Krishna is expert in pacifying and consoling. So, he started consoling her wife. 29. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Mama Vaidarbhya Suyetha Janetvam Matparayanam Tatvachaha Shrotukamena Shavilya Charitam Angame. The Supreme Lord said, O Vaidarbhi, do not be displeased with me. I know that you are fully devoted to me. I only spoke in jest, dear lady, because I wanted to hear what you would say.
I just wanted to hear you say, like that. I didn't mean anything, sorry. I never expected that you will feel so hurt like this.
So, Krishna is trying to clarify his intentions at this point. Mukham cha prema sambrambha spurita dharamikshitam katakshe paruna pangam sundara bharu kutitatam. I also wanted to see your face with lips trembling in loving anger, the reddish corners of your eyes throwing sidelong glances, and the line of your beautiful eyebrows knit in a frown. This is a very wonderful principle that is explained in this purport. Generally, whenever Krishna desires, his beloved devotees are automatically empowered, are programmed, or what to say, they have the, by default, they have the mood to fulfill the desire of Krishna. Right? To act in such a way that Krishna's desire gets fulfilled. For example, in this context only, Krishna wanted to see, Krishna's desire is, he wants to see the anger of Rukmini. So to fulfill, Krishna has such a sankalpa shakti, right? So whatever he desires has to be fulfilled, ichha shakti. So none of his desires should be left unfulfilled. So Krishna has to, Krishna when he desired like that, Rukmini has to manifest anger so that Krishna will be pleased. That's the regular trend. That's how devotee operates himself. That such a person is called a devotee. Simple. However, sometimes devotee's mood overpowers Krishna and
devotee's desire or his own prominent mood becomes superior or more important than Krishna's desire, then Krishna will come under the control of the devotee's mood and he will keep aside his own mood. So Bhakta Vatsalya is Krishna's affection for devotees. Bhakta Vashyata is Krishna's being conquered by his devotees. That's the difference between these two terms. So in many cases Krishna exhibits Bhakta Vashyata, Bhakta Vatsalya, but in some rare cases he also exhibits Bhakta Vashyata. We have seen so many devotees who are acting according to the will of Krishna, trying to fulfill the desires of Krishna, acting according to the instructions of Krishna. But in some rare cases we also see Krishna just adjusting his mood according to his desires, according to the mood of devotees. That's the example of Rukmini. Rukmini is supposed to exhibit anger because Krishna desired to see her anger. But Rukmini did not exhibit anger. Rukmini just fainted. Right? You see, she fainted and fell to the ground. Her unique mood predominated in this situation, and thus Krishna has to just take a low profile. Far from displeasing Krishna, however, she increased his transcendental ecstasy by exhibiting her all-encompassing love for him. So now Krishna's desire is unfulfilled. Right? Krishna's desire to see the anger of Rukmini is unfulfilled. But is he displeased? No. That's the uniqueness of Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. Whatever Krishna, because he is the absolute truth, he is Swarat, he is the supreme controller, everything is under his control, he is the source of everything, whatever he desires has to be fulfilled. And his devotee means by default, he or she is supposed to act in such a way that Krishna's desires are fulfilled. Now, here one devotee is acting in such a way that Krishna's desire remains unfulfilled, but Krishna is pleased. Krishna is happy. Although his desire is unfulfilled, Krishna is not disappointed. Krishna is not displeased. Krishna is not frustrated. When your desires are frustrated, when your desires are not fulfilled, you feel frustrated, you feel discouraged, you feel unhappy. And whoever has frustrated your desires, you feel little angry with him or inimical towards him or upset with him, like that. But that is the uniqueness of Krishna's leelas. His devotee who is supposed to fulfill those desires, act against his desires, and Krishna is not displeased and Krishna is impressed. That is Damodar leela also. Sorry, we are more into the preparation of Kartik, that is only coming. I didn't intend to bring in Damodar leela in this chapter, but matching. So, Krishna's desire is to play with Yashodamai, play with his friends. He had his whole itinerary planned. I want to go to different gopis' houses and steal butter and do a lot of mischief. So Krishna was planning like this. So his Satya Sankalpa Shakti called his Vibhuti Shakti, you come and manifest in Krishna's belly so that Yashodamai cannot bind. So Vibhuti Shakti manifested and Yashodamai is unable to bind. But Krishna had to compromise. When Krishna desired to play, his devotee Yashodamai was supposed to act in such a way that Krishna's desire gets fulfilled. Otherwise, why would she be called devotee? But Yashodamai exactly acted opposite to the way. Her determination and her desire is completely against Krishna's desire. So Krishna had to bring a transformation in his own desire to fulfill the desire of his devotee. Yashodamai did not compromise. She is continuing determination. ठीक है, I'll get ropes from other houses. I'll get all ropes which are there in Vrindavan village. I have to see the extent of my son's waist today. It's hardly like my fist only. I'm getting meters of rope. He's not getting bone. I will not give up. She's smiling also and she's endeavoring also. Seeing the endeavor, Krishna surrendered. So Krishna surrendered. Yashodamai did not surrender. So sometimes devotee becomes so stubborn out of love for Krishna, and Krishna surrenders to the stubbornness of his devotee. That's what the unique and peculiar wonderful character of characteristic of devotional service. So Krishna wanted to protect Arjuna. That Krishna never wanted Bhishma to kill Arjuna. But Bhishma took a vow against Krishna. Krishna took a vow that I will not touch a weapon. But Bhishma said Krishna either has to take his weapon or he has to see his friend die. That's how I will fight tomorrow. So Krishna said, my God, I cannot give up my affection to Arjuna. At the same time, I cannot give up my affection towards Bhishma also. Bhishma is my devotee. His vow is also very important. So only, path or way out Krishna found out was, let me compromise my own vow. That's okay. He chose to give up his own vow to protect his devotee and devotee's vow. So by picking up that Ratha Chakra, Rathanga, the chariot wheel, Krishna satisfied Bhishma, Krishna protected Arjuna. Thus he exhibited his love for Bhishma, he exhibited his love for this Arjuna. And he compromised his own vow, no problem. And in one sense, Ratha Chakra is not considered a weapon also, in that sense it is justified. At the same time he picked up and just ran towards Bhishma as if to kill him also. So thus Bhishma's desire is satisfied and his Arjuna is protected. See, Krishna, he gives importance to what he gives. His heart is revealed in various pastimes of Bhagavatam and Mahabharata and Ramayana, etc. Krishna gives utmost importance to the emotions of his devotees, the feelings of his devotees, the love and affection, the sentiments of his devotees. So in front of those feelings and affection and love and sentiments of his devotees, Krishna wouldn't mind to compromise or give up his own opulence and qualities and promises and vows, etc. He can compromise on all his things just to prove his affection for his devotee, Kripa Shakti. Kripa Shakti of Krishna is the king of all his opulences. When that prevails, when Krishna comes into a merciful mood, all opulences have to take a low profile. Satya Shankara will go away. Bhuti Shakti, just relax somewhere. Ichha Shakti, just wait for outside. Kripa Shakti will prevail. Like that. So that is Krishna's unique character. That's why we also have to take some inspiration from Krishna, and we need to understand what should I give importance to. Should I give more importance to rules, policies, protocols? What is correct? What is wrong? Is this the highest thing? Being right and wrong is not as important as giving importance to devotees' genuine feelings and sentiments. Protecting devotees' inspiration is more important than being right and wrong. That's why all these managers have a very fine rule, responsibility in balancing between emotions of devotees and what is right and what is wrong. What are the policies? When to take a call, when to compromise on the policies to keep the devotees inspired, and when to just ask the devotees to compromise so that the policy can be running the show, right, can be respected. So that depends on time, place, circumstances. To the extent one does it effectively, to that extent he can do nice service. To the extent one does in a, unbalanced way, to that extent he will be the recipient of the glances and reactions and he'll become an object of the displeasure of, discontent of devotees. And one has to be ready for it also. So, there's a risk factor there. So one has a responsibility to understand when to compromise on the policy and when to just do something that might apparently or externally cause some inconvenience to other people. Right? So it is not always correct to give importance to rules only. That's why Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, all three are there. Not only Shastra. Shastra principle means bas. This, no compromise. This Shastra principle has to be upheld in all circumstances. There is no compromise on this. Some say like that. So that they are correct also. But why Guru and Sadhu are also involved? Need not be Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. It can be only Shastra. So Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, all are important. Prabhupada, according to time, place and circumstances, he made some adjustments and applied Shastric principles in such a way that they become relevant to the people around. Yeah, truth is there, but anudvega karam vakyam satyam priyahiram chivat. Anudvega karam. You have to speak the truth in such a way that that does not cause udvega to the devotees, to other people. But how did Krishna begin Bhagavad Gita? How did he speak? What was the first dialogue that he spoke in Bhagavad Gita? Klaibhyam asmaramah partha naitutvai upapadyate. Partha, O Arjuna, you are behaving impotently. So this kind of mentality doesn't befit you. Does it not cause udvega? He is saying austerity of speech in the 16th chapter, 17th chapter somewhere. And in the second chapter he says you are impotent, Arjuna. That causes udvega in any kshatriya. Time, place, circumstances. Oh, you should always be mild, you should always present like this. No, something has to be hilly also. And sometimes you have to be mild also. Right? So when to be mild, when to be hilly. When to immediately give feedback, when to wait for a while and then give feedback. And when, whom to give feedback immediately, whom not to give feedback immediately. That in what circumstances you should correct people, in what circumstances you should wait and be patient and allow him to grow. To whom you should give space and to whom you should not give space. Where you have to go into finer details and quote unquote micromanage the situation, and where you should be a little detached and then let things flow, let people commit some errors and then do something. So yeah, you should give space to people, you should allow them to make mistakes and grow. But if something is very critical, you can't be like that. You have no space to give him space. Otherwise he will get spaced out. And the service will get spaced out. Right? It will become overall disservice. Where you have to be extremely alert, if you think that I have to be liberal and give space, then that will be a disservice. Right? When to do what? It depends on one's own maturity and connection with Super Soul. Right? There is no black and white rule to be applied anywhere. So I think we went into a different direction. But here the point is, question. You are you? Both, okay.
Yeah, you spoke about Bhakta Vatsalata and
Bhakta Vatsalya and Bhakta Vashyata.
Bhakta Vashyata. So you just gave some definition. Can you just repeat that?
Bhakta Vatsalya means Krishna's affection for his devotees. Krishna is compassionate and kind and sympathetic to his devotees. He is affectionate, that is Bhakta Vatsalya. Bhakta Vashyata means Krishna is so overwhelmed with the affection of his devotee that he comes under his control. Now in Bhakta Vatsalya, Krishna is here, devotee is here. In Bhakta Vashyata, Krishna comes here and devotee is here. Getting right? Dekha gaya hai? Nahi dekha. In Bhakta Vatsalya, Krishna is here and devotee is here. You understand? It's from top-down approach. In Bhakta Vashyata, devotee becomes above and Krishna comes below. I am under your control. You can bind me. You can conquer me. You can punish me. You can do whatever you want with me. That's what Krishna... That's not happening with any devotee. Nevam virincho na bhava na shri ratya na shri नेवन विंचो न भवो न श्री रत्नंग संश्रया प्रसादम लेखिने गोपी यत प्राप्त अभिमुक्ति दात. सो ऑल्दो कृष्णा इज भक्ति आवश्यक एवरीबडी इज भक्ति ऑफ कृष्णा बट नॉट एवरीबडी इज भक्ति ऑफ द स्टेचर ऑफ मदर यशोदा. हर बीइंग भक्ति ऑफ कृष्णा हर बीइंग भक्त ऑफ कृष्णा इज सुपीरियर टू लक्ष्मी's being bhakta of Krishna, Shiva's being bhakta of Krishna, or Brahma's being bhakta or bhakti of Krishna also. There is a gradation amongst bhaktias also. Bhakti Vashyata is not applied to every bhaktia. Nārtava bhaktia, sava bhaktia. Means Krishna is bhakti Vashyata to everyone or what? Not everyone, only few. Prabhupada explains like this in that purport.
The question related to same two terms. So Krishna becomes Bhakta Vashyata because he has so much love for his devotees. So can we understand that it is Bhakta Vashyata is a high degree of Bhakta Vatsalta? Because
of course it is.
Because of Bhakta Vatsalta, he has so much Bhakta Vatsalta, so he becomes
correct.
It is a higher degree of Bhakta Vatsalta.
Bhakta Vashyata is a higher platform than Bhakta Vatsalya. You say Bhakta Vatsalya little extra, more. Next. So this is the situation here. Love beyond Krishna's expectation. Right? Krishna wanted her to become angry and she fainted. She made her become angry. And that means Krishna even more. It's like you wanted milk and he will give you not milk, he will give butter milk. He will become more pleased. Like that. You are expecting only milk and you give him bara milk or you put some more dry fruits in it. What else you can, what other things you can put in milk to make it more excited?
Saffron.
And that red kasturi, what is that called? Kesar. Kesari saffron only? That is it. So you make it, increase its flavor, condense it. So that's what he is giving. Rukmini is giving. Next verse. The greatest pleasure worldly householders can enjoy at home is to spend time joking with their beloved wives. Maybe a timid and temperamental one. Ayam hi paramalabha brihesh brihamedhinam yan narmair iyade yamaha priyaya bruhi bhamini. Bhamini is temperamental woman. Very angry, passionate, temperamental woman. Since lovely Rukmini did not become angry despite all provocation, the Lord still started speaking to her like this. Now Sukadeva Goswami is continuing. The rest of the chapter is another exciting episode where Rukmini counters Krishna's arguments. I'm not sure if it can complete. Half an hour, right? Sukadeva Goswami continued. Queen Vaidarbhi was fully pacified by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understood that his words had been spoken in jest. Thus she gave up her fear that her beloved would reject her. Because all Krishna's words seemed very insensitive and causing insecurity in the other person and threatening and causing fear in the other person. That's what Krishna spoke. Right? Why can't you marry Shishupal? Do you think I am suitable for you? I am like this, I am like this. I have so many enemies. I can't even protect myself, I am detached. I married you not because I have love for you, I have duty for other people. I have married you not because I have love for you, I wanted to humble them. That was my first prayer. Right? So I told my boss when I was leaving my company, I told my boss, like, why you want to do this course? I said, I am joining BT, give me leave, 1 year leave. After 1 week I said, I am resigning, he is leaving from service. Then my boss said, why you said you wanted to bring your family here, you wanted to do this, you wanted to do research in speech processing and all this. I am trying to understand the pattern in which you are coming to our company and all. I don't remember exactly what all he said, that's all of that. Then I said, when I came, joined your company last year, he told me, you came to our company without having a job. Right? So generally you take offer letter from someone and then you will resign in the previous company, in the other company. I resigned without having an offer in hand. So he Bhagavas caught that.
You resigned without having any job only, without we giving you offer letter, you resigned your previous job. So I'm just trying to understand the pattern, what's happening. You are saying resigning 1 year. Is it like some
you're saying like 2 hours of being doing? I said last year VTA started. So last May VTA started. So I'm resigning. This June BT is starting, that's why I'm resigning. Ah, now I understand. he was trying to correlate. Then what he said? It's very disappointing. If you are coming to Bombay for doing that course and not for job, not for doing research in our company as a speech programmer or speech researcher, it's very discouraging, it's very disappointing, you said. I mean, did you find any problem with my performance? I mean, when I'm in the company, I'm doing it proper. I said, yeah, I have nothing against your performance, but the very reason why you have come to Bombay, now I came to know after 1 year, when you're about to leave, I'm a little discouraged, little, very much discouraged. So, again, it's disappointing to Rukmini also, right? You came not out of love for me. You came out of enmity towards Jarasandha, enmity towards Shishupal, enmity towards Rukmini. That's why you married me, like that Rukmini started becoming, she was reacting to what all Krishna spoke. So, now she gained confidence. When Krishna reassured her that I was only teasing you, I was only making fun. After all, what other fun they have, cow soldiers will have. Just to have some joking conversation with their beloved wives is the only pleasure of such householders. I'm just joking only. Don't take it so seriously. You are painting, what's happening? Then Rukmini was composed now. She smiled also, bashfully, as she cast her charming, affectionate glances upon the face of the Lord, the best of males. Rukmini spoke now. Now she was pacified when she is speaking with smiles and all. But what she speaks is really ripping off all the arguments given by Krishna. And the purports of these verses are elaborate than the purports of what Krishna has spoken. So we need to understand. So when Rukmini speaks, it's more powerful than when Krishna speaks. Right? Because Rukmini speaks the truth. Krishna spoke lies. So far. So truth is always powerful, right? So Rukmini highlights the truthful aspect of Krishna's speech than the apparent, untruth that he has spoken. Sri Rukmini Vacha Nanvevam Nanvevametadaravinda Vilochanah Yadvai Bhavan Bhagavato Sadrishini Bhumnah Kvasvema Hinyavirato Bhagavam Stryadhishah Kvaham Guna Prakritaranna Brihita Pada. Read the text. Sri Rukmini said, actually, what you have said is true. O Lotus Eyed One, I am indeed unsuitable for Almighty Personality of the Godhead. What comparison is there between the Supreme Lord, who is the master of the three primary deities and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools? Nanveva metad Aravinda Vilochana. Aravinda Vilochana means lotus eyed lord. So Rukmini says this verse is a counter argument for the 11th verse that Krishna spoke. In the 11th verse, Krishna said that you have bothered Your brother offered you to Shishupal and your father offered you to Shishupal. Leaving all of them, why did you choose me? I am not equal to you. Now, she counters that argument. Yadvai bhavan bhagavato sadrishi vibhunnaha kasve mahimya virato bhagavam strudhishaha. My dear Lord, you are tridhisha. You are the master of the three worlds. You are the master of the three modes, etc., etc. So, what comparison is there between the Supreme Lord and myself? A woman of mundane qualities whose feet are grasped by fools. Two points are there in Krishna's argument in 11th verse. First part is, you were offered to Shishupal. Second is, you have chosen me. Now, I am not your equal. Rukmini says, yes, my Lord, what you said is true. I am not your equal. You have transcendental qualities and I am a simple woman. And the first part is, my feet are glassed only by fools. Shishupal and all that he said, na? My feet are, whose feet are grasped by fools, a woman of mundane qualities. And so what you said is true. So basically the main point here is, Krishna said that I am not your equal, or you will marry me. Rukmini said, yes, I am not your, yes, you are not my equal, you are superior. You have transcendental qualities and I have mundane qualities. Like that very humbly she said. She humbled herself. Later in another chapter, 84, 85, something like that, all the queens of Dwaraka meet Draupadi at Kurukshetra. At that time, all the queens present themselves, humble themselves, saying that I am not qualified to become the consort of Krishna, but out of his great kindness, he accepted me as his wife. I am actually his maid servant. His qualities are unlimited and transcendental, and we have no qualification at all to become his consorts. So it is his mercy that he has accepted us. Like that same mood Rukmini is maintaining here. So now, I think this purport I would have spoken in the beginning only. Here in the purport, Krishna's arguments or Krishna's teasing comments are given one word or two word titles. You can see the third line. They include incompatibility, fearfulness, taking shelter in ocean, quarrelling with the powerful, abandoning his kingdom, uncertainty as to his identity, acting against ordinary standards of behavior, having no good qualities, being praised by false, by beggars, aloofness means detachment, and lack of desire for family life. These are the 11 arguments that Krishna gave. You can see in the purport, direct purport, third line. So Rukmini very systematically smashes all these 11 arguments in her verses. First is incompatibility, now she smashed it. Right? So he did it in such a way that Rukmini did it in such a way that she exhibited her extreme humility in identifying herself with the lost external energy, which is in fact her expansion. I have mundane qualities, that's what Rukmini said. But mundane qualities are exhibited by lost external energy, not internal energy. But external energy is also an expansion of internal energy only. In that sense, Rukmini identified herself with external energy more than being the internal energy of Krishna. So that is, she exhibited her humility. Next, in the 35th verse, Rukmini counter-argues with the 12th verse of Krishna. See, in the 34th verse she said, Kvaham gana prakritir agna grihita pada. Gana prakriti, I have mundane qualities, material qualities. Agna grihita pada means my feet are grasped by only fools. Because people who are desirous of material wealth and other material power, they grasp the feet of external energy of the Lord, Kali, Durga, Mahankali, Mahakali, all this, right? That way. Satyam bhayat iva gune bhuru kramantah.
विधु विधुतं तमोन्धम
Yes, my Lord Urukrama, you lay down within the ocean as if afraid of material moths, and thus in pure consciousness you appear within the heart as the super soul. You are always battling against the foolish material senses, and indeed even you yourself once reject the prevailing privilege of the royal dominion, which leads to the blindness of ignorance.
So in the 12th verse, Krishna said that I am a coward. Out of fear of so many kings, I just ran and took shelter in ocean, samudram. Then Rukmini said, Satyam bhayad iva gunabhya urukramena sete samudra upalambhana matra atma. So Rukmini said, you lay down in the ocean as if afraid of moors. That's why she is using moors. Instead of kings, we'll understand now. Basically, as if afraid of kings, Krishna took shelter of ocean. Yes, it is correct. Fearful of devotees for falling into material modes. Basically, the ocean there is the heart of the devotee. I think we discussed already in 12th purport. So, Krishna takes shelter of the ocean of the heart of devotees to protect them from modes. Krishna took the shelter of ocean apparently to protect himself from other kings. Replace kings with moles. Replace ocean with devotee's heart. Krishna takes shelter of devotee's heart, ocean, to protect the devotee from falling into material moles. Right? And you can read this purport very nicely written. The actual rulers of this world are not the kings. The actual rulers of the world are the moors, gunas. Out of fear of gunas, Krishna ran into the ocean. Out of fear of kings, Krishna ran into the ocean. But actual kings are not the kings of the material world like Jarasandha, Shishupala, Kalayavana, Dantavakra, not these fellows. The real kings, the rulers of this world are the moors, that way. Because Krishna fears that his devotee will come under the influence of moths and becomes entangled in sense gratification, he enters into the internal ocean of their hearts where he remains as super soul, upalambhamatra atma, and he protects the devotees. See, such a wonderful interpretation of Krishna's words. When you interpret something, a divine meaning should come out. That's why acharyas also interpret. When you interpret something, to impose your own thoughts on it, that is called misinterpretation. So misinterpretation. But see, Rukmini is misinterpreting Krishna's statements to bring out such a wonderful, glorious meaning, which is also truth, right? Tirthanrupasanam. Krishna also spoke in the 12th verse that he had so many enemies. Right? So in pure consciousness, Krishna appears within the heart as a super soul and battle against the enemies of sense gratification. For the devotees, Krishna has so many powerful enemies. That's the point, right? Who are the enemies? Sense gratification. The sense gratification desires are very powerful. Krishna staying in the heart of the devotee will smash all of the enemies. And also Krishna said, we have abandoned the royal throne. Is it not? Further Rukmini says, even your servants reject such royal throne, right, which leads to blindness of ignorance. You are after all satisfied in spiritual bliss. Even your own devotees are detached from any thrones or privileged positions in this material world. How can you be attached? Like that she rejected. And also coward, he also mentioned coward, right? In the first argument about I have taken shelter in the ocean. So she says that like a lion, you drove away the kings and took your fair share. Right? It is only foolishness if you say you took shelter in the ocean out of fear of kings. You are like a lion. You do not run away. So like that Rukmini counter argues. 36th verse. त्वत्पाद पद्म मकरंद जुषाम मणीनाम मुनीनाम वर्त्मास्फुटम नृपशुभेर ननु दुर्विभाव्यम यस्मादलौकिकम् इवेहितमैश्वरेस्य भूमं स्तवेहितमथो अनुते अनुये भवन्तम्
Your moments, instructable even for the sages who relish the honey of your lotus feet, are certainly incomprehensible for human beings who behave like animals. And just as your activities are transcendental, O powerful Lord, so too are those of your followers.
So that is the argument, 13th verse. Krishna said, women are usually destined to suffer when they stay with men with uncertain behavior, etc. That he said right in 13th verse. She is contra-arguing in the 36th verse. You and your followers' activities are always transcendental. You call it uncertain, I call it transcendental. So, Pada Padma Makaranda Dushan Muninam. Munis means great devotees who have taken shelter of the honey of Krishna's lotus feet. Vartmasputam Nrupashubhir Nanu Durvibhavyam. Their Vartma, their character and their behavior is incomprehensible to the conditioned soul. Even your devotee's movements are so mysterious, they are not understandable. How can your character or behavior be conceivable? You say it's unpredictable and uncertain and improper, and it's not improved by social rules and codes, but it is the nature of devotees also. And you are their Lord, definitely your nature is incomprehensible. So just because someone is unable to understand the behavior of a person, that doesn't make his behavior wrong. Like that. That's what she says. And 41st verse also is a contra-argument for this. We'll read that. Yadvanchaya drupasikhamayo angavainya. 41 I'm reading. Jayantanahushagada gaya gaya aikyapatyam Rajyam visrajya vibhushvarvanam ambujaksha Sirantite anupadavim kalihasitaskim Reading your association, the best of the kings, Anga, Vinaya, Jayanta, Nahusha, Gaya and others abandoned their absolute sovereignty and entered the forest to seek you out. How could those kings suffer frustration in this world, O lotus-eyed one? So seeking the Lord's association and Lord's shelter, many such kings like Anga, Gaya, Nahusha, they all entered the forest. Right? So, how could they suffer frustration? Apparently, Anga Maharaj just left. So, people are very unpredictable behavior. In the middle of the day, he just left. He's not a socially approved behavior, all that they say. And same thing with Gaya also. And there are other people. Who is that? Utkala, Ramaraj's son. He just ran away. He was behaving like an adult. He just wanted to avoid kingdom responsibility. He was a great devotee, Mahabharata devotee. So, sometimes devotees' behavior also is very unpredictable and uncommon. Rishabhadeva also acted like an Avadhut Brahman, right? So it's not easy to understand. What is that verse? What is that quote? Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra, that is one thing. Another thing is that softer than rose and harder than thunderbolt. Vajradavi Kataram, Kusumadavi Komalam. So even devotees' behavior is also very incomprehensible. Ordinary people cannot understand and decode their behavior. What to speak of you? That's what she says. Right? In these two verses, she counter-argues with Krishna's argument. 13th verse. 13th verse counter-argument is 41 and 36. Okay? And 48th verse also we will read. This is a contra argument for 12th verse, which I already mentioned earlier. Jagyam vachastava tadayastu bhupam vidravya sangya nimadena jahatmantam simho yatha svabalimesha pashun svabhagam tebhyo bhayat yad udadhim sharanam prapannah. My Lord, as the lion drives away the lesser animals to claim his proper tribute, you drove off the assembled kings with the resounding clang of your saranga bow and then claimed me, your fair share. Thus, it is sheer foolishness, my dear Vedatrija, for you to say you took the shelter in the ocean out of fear of those kings. So you took the shelter in the ocean out of fear of kings, that's what you claim in the 12th verse. Now in the 40th verse she says that, like a lion, you came and took me, your share, your rightful share. Because so many kings are lying that Krishna alone came in his chariot, picked up Rukmani, kept her on her chariot, you just ran. Very royal and regal. So how can you be afraid? And when these fellows came to attack you, you fought with them. So much army you killed. And when you are about to kill my brother Rukmi, I came and protected him. Right? And you showed him up. Very peculiar haircut you gave him. So how can you be afraid of any kings? Out of your humility or out of joke or whatever you are saying that I ran away from these kings and took shelter in the ocean. That is not wrong. She completely nullifies all the arguments of Krishna. Right? So this is another argument for 12th verse. So 35 and 40 are Rukmani's reply to 12th verse. Okay. Next. 36 and 41 are Rukmani's reply to 13th verse. Is clear? Flow is clear? Next. 30, we will go into the regular order. 37th verse. 36 we discussed. So you can, in the 36th paper one point is there. Those who are entangled in well behavior are trying to enjoy this world more or less like animals. Even if such people are culturally advanced, they should simply be considered sophisticated, polished animals. Rukmani points out that because the Lord's activities were always transcendental, aspashta, unclear to ordinary people, even sages trying to know the Lord cannot perfectly understand his activities. Aspashta. Okay, 37th verse. This is a counter-argument for 14th verse. In 14th verse, what did he say? Nishkinchana. I am Nishkinchana. My devotees are Nishkinchana. Means I have no material possessions. They also don't have material possessions. Those who have material possessions, they don't worship me. This is what he said in 14th verse. Now she says, Nishkinchano nanu bhavan nayatosti kinchit.
Nishkinchano nanu bhavan nayatosti kinchit.
Yasmai balim bali bhujo viharanta jadya.
Yasmai balim bali bhujo viharanta
jadya. Natva vibhanta shutrupontakam adhyatandha.
Natva vibhanta shutrupontakam
Preshtho Bhavan Bali Bhujam Api Tepi Tubhyam.
Preshtho Bhavan Bali Bhujam Api Tepi Tubhyam.
You possess nothing because there is nothing beyond you. Even the great enjoyers of the tribute, Brahma and other demigods, pay tribute to you. Those who are blinded by their wealth and absorbed in gratifying their senses do not recognize you in the form of death. But to the gods, the enjoyers of tribute, you are the most dear as they are to you. So this is a very wonderful verse and counter argument. More elaboration on the word Nishkinchana. Krishna says, I am Nishkinchana. I have no possessions. So literally that means that I am like a beggar. I have no wealth. But Rukmani says, you possess nothing because nothing is beyond you. Everything is within you only. So you possess nothing means you possess everything, in one sense. So nothing is, there is nothing beyond you to possess. Everything is within you only. What is there for you to acquire? So in that sense you possess nothing. And what he said, Nishkinchana Priyataman, in the 14th verse, Krishna, what did he say? Nishkinchana Vayam, Nishkinchana Janapriyaha. I am very dear to people who possess nothing. That means, the most wealthiest souls worship the Lord. The wealth is not material wealth. Even great demigods like Brahma, Shiva, etc., they pay tribute to the Lord. They recognize that everything belongs to the Lord and they possess nothing. One who has the understanding that I possess nothing is a Nishkinchana. Such people worship the Lord who is Nishkinchana. Brahma thinks in his right consciousness, he always thinks that I possess nothing. What did he say? Nabharati mengam rushoka lakshati nai kuchin me manasam rushagati. After that, another verse is there. Swayam swayam ati sayamya tridhishaha. Like that he says, Pajapati inam alvabhivandita pati. Although I am such a great Brahma, like who is respected by so many prajapatis and who is respected by, worshipped by so many sages, etc., I still cannot understand the Supreme Lord. And my words and actions and thoughts become true only because of my dedication to the Supreme Lord. I cannot understand Him. I possess nothing. I offer obeisances to Him, that is best way for me. And when Narada Muni questioned Brahmaji in the second canto, 5th chapter, what did he say? He is the creator. And I recreate what has already been created. That's all he says. You remember 2nd canto, 5th chapter. So, such great exalted devotees like Brahmaji or Shiva, they are all of such exalted consciousness. Sometimes Brahma Mohanlela and something's happened, but that's fine. But generally they have this feeling that we possess nothing. He possesses everything. That's why they are called Akinchana or Nishkinchana. So, Lord is dear to such Nishkinchana people. This is clear. So when Lord said Nishkinchana, I am Nishkinchana Janapriya. She countered both. She gave the right explanation for these two things. And third thing, what Krishna said, wealthy people hardly ever worship me. What does Rukmini say? People who are blinded by their material wealth cannot recognize your form. That's why they don't worship you. That is their drawback, not your drawback. You are presenting all these things as your drawback, but actually they are your strengths. You are calling yourself Nishkinchana, that means you possess everything. You have nothing beyond you to possess anything. And when you are saying, I am Nishkinchana Janapriyaha, people like Brahma, Shiva and etc., who are of such wonderful consciousness of recognizing you as a Supreme Master, they worship you. Actually they possess everything. That is a real possession. So this is clear, 3 points in this verse, she counter-argued. So in the purport, these things are elaborated little more. I think I already mentioned it. Kinchana means something, all that you know. Here, the quote, Prabhupada's very first introduction, the conception of God and the conception of Absolute Truth are not on the same level. Remember, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam Prabhupada writes, the conception of God indicates the controller, whereas Absolute Truth indicates ultimate source of all energies, that is Sammam Bhuvanam. Lord is the Supreme, highest in rank, power, authority, highest in quality, achievement, performance, highest in degree, he is the final, he is the ultimate. None of these definitions adequately indicate the absolute existence. He is beyond everything. Right? Everything is resting on him, everything is dependent on him. He is like, what is that verse? Narada Muni, 6 questions. Yad rupam, yad adhishtanam, yad asrishtam, yad param. Yatcha. Yat param is dependence. Then yad adhishtanam is basis. He is the basis or everything is dependent on him only. Vasudeva Narayana, these are the Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Paramakha, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Tapa, Vasudeva Paradharma, all that, the 8 things are there, right? So he is the source of everything. That's why he is called Nishkinchana. Nishkinchana. Kinchana means something. Nishkinchana means there is nothing which is beyond him. That is called Nishkinchana. Okay? One who does not have something or one who has nothing. Like that. Next. The word supreme indicates the best in a hierarchy, and that the supreme being may merely be understood as the best and greatest of all beings, but not as the very source of all other beings also. That's why absolute truth indicates that he is source of all those things. So supreme means best of a lot. Now you have, say, mangoes, 100 mangoes, you pick up one, this is the best of all mangoes, fine. That is supreme. Absolute truth means no other mango in the entire creation, in the past or in the future, can defeat the status of this mango, and it is the source of all the mangoes and the sweetness. Something like that. Very crude example. Just. So, it is the source also. It is the best of all created things that is supreme, but the source of all created things is absolute truth. Paramtattvam. Absolute truth means this truth is never compromised. It is unconditioned. It's not related to anything. Right? It's absolute. So there is no compromise in Krishna's being the supreme. So supreme is not sufficient. The word supreme is not sufficient. Absolute truth is a better word. Okay, absolute, supreme absolute truth. So Krishna is not merely supreme being, he is absolute being. Okay? So that's how she counters the 14th verse. My God, I think should I stop here? We must. 37 is done, right? 38, 39. Oh, till 45, till 46 is, it will be long. In that two already we covered. 1 minute, 39. Shall I take till 42? Till we started late also. Many of you did not come in the beginning. I have my counter argument. Mm, 38, right? Not my words, we can complete fast also. Tvam vai samasta purushartamayah phalatma yadvanchaya sumatayo visrujanti krishnam tesham vibho samuchito bhavatah samajah Peshambi Pumsaha Striyascha Ratayoha Sukha Dukha Norna. You are the embodiment of all human goals, and you and are yourself the fine aim of life. Desiring to attain you, O powerful Lord, intelligent persons abandon everything else. It is they who are worthy of your association, not man and woman, absorbed in the pleasure and grief resulting from their mutual lust. This is a counter argument for 15th verse. I am speaking directly from the purports only. Every purport is explaining which is the counter argument for which verse. In 15th verse, what did he say? For vivaha and maitri, means for marriage and for friendship, you should find an equal, not an inferior or superior, right? Do you remember? So equal in wealth, equal in birth, equal in influence, equal in physical appearance, etc., etc., right? So in this verse, Rukmani clearly says it's not applicable to you. Because you yourself are the final aim of life. Desiring to attain you, intelligent people abandon everything else. Right? Where is the question of speaking about equality, etc., etc.? There is no one equal to you. No one can think that, oh, he is my equal, I can have a marriage relationship with him or a friendly relationship with him. Who is equal to you? So this verse is okay in the common, colloquial, conventional world. But you are beyond this. You are Nishkinchana. How can this formula be applicable to you? And after all, no one is equal to you, and on top of it, everyone's goal is you. Thus, for Maitri or Vivaha or whatever it may be, in whichever rasa people want to approach, they have to approach you only. Their rasa, primary rasa is with you only. Right? That way Rukmini counteracts. So, in fact, only those who have given up such material conception of sense gratification and have taken exclusive shelter of Lord and His loving service can understand who their real friend and companion is. It is Krishna Himself. Krishna is universally the eternal friend and companion of every single living entity in the entire cosmic manifestation since time immemorial and for the rest of eternity. Right? So, we can't put all these worldly impositions in relationship with Krishna. This is clear? 39th verse. Tvamyasta danda muni bhir gadita anubhava Atmatmarascha jagatam iti nevrutosi
Knowing that great sages who have renounced this sannyasi's danda proclaim your glories, that you are the supreme soul of all the world, and that you are so gracious that you give away even your own self, I choose you as my husband, rejecting Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and the rulers of heaven, whose aspirations are frustrated by the force of time, which is born from your eyebrows. What interest then could I have in any other suitors?
In the 16th verse, Krishna said, I am glorified with deluded beggars. Is it not? Now 39th verse Rukmini is saying, countering him, that your glories are sung by Paramahamsas, not deluded beggars. The deluded beggars you are speaking about are the Paramahamsas who have given up even sannyas danda also. Paramahamsas need not even carry sannyas danda. Why Nityananda Prabhu broke Mahaprabhu's danda? Because Paramahamsas need not, and Mahaprabhu is supreme Paramahamsa. He is on the Paramahamsa stage already by default. Before accepting sannyas only. So he need not have. So Nityananda Prabhu broke this danda into three parts and threw it in that river. And Lord Chaitanya came and asked, give me danda. Mahaprabhu's point is, I have to be an exemplary sannyasi. Every sannyasi should carry a danda. I should not compromise on it. I have to set the best example like that he was desiring to hold danda. Nityananda Prabhu said, you are in ecstasy. I was also in ecstasy. We both were dancing and we fell on the danda and danda broke. And where is the danda? Where are the broken pieces? I don't know. And he said like that. And Mahaprabhu got frustrated and he said, I cannot travel with you anymore. Either you go before or you go after. I am going alone. So he went to Jagannathpuri, leaving the whole party. He went to Jagannathpuri and fainted in ecstasy there, in front of Jagannath temple. Then Sarva Bhattacharya and came and picked him up and then took him to his house. And Nityananda Prabhu, Jagadananda, Mukunda, all of them are coming and saying, where is Mahaprabhu, where is Mahaprabhu? And at the main gate, Simhadwar, people were discussing, Mahaprabhu is, Mahaprabhu, they don't know Mahaprabhu. They said, some sannyasi came here, they were painting, and the Dwarapal, he was trying to beat the sannyasi. Suddenly Sarva Bhattacharya came and saw his effulgence and took him his home. And that is definitely Mahaprabhu only. So all of these people went there. Andhra Devi, Gopinath Acharya. Anyways, Paramahamsa. So such Paramahamsas worship Krishna. Right? So they are beyond sannyas danda. And Krishna also said, my dear Rukmini, you are not foresighted. Means you don't have long-term vision. Out of your innocence or whatever, you chose me. Right? You were not very intelligent enough to choose your spouse. Then she says, knowing these, knowing your qualities, knowing you to be the object of worship of Paramahamsas also, I have chosen you. rejecting even great demigods like Brahma and other people. In Lakshmi Swayamvara in Samudra Manthan, Lakshmi was going to Brahma, Bhrugu, so many personalities she encounters. He has these good qualities, but he has this shortcoming. So like that, she does thorough fault finding of all these universal celebrities and puts the Varamala, Swayamvara Mala in Vishnu's neck. That. So Krishna is superior to anyone in the entire universe. All the celebrities are there assembled in Lakshmi Swayamvara. So that the best person was proved to be Vishnu, not anyone else. So Rukmini also says the same thing. Rukmini and Lakshmi both are same. Fine. Next. One more argument also he gives, she gives, Krishna gives. I have no good qualities. Gunaheena. Like that Krishna says in the, which verse? 16th verse. Right? So to that Rukmini gives counter-argument in 42nd verse. 40-41 we already discussed, do you remember?
Yes.
42. Kandyam shrayeta tava pada sarva jagandham.
Kandyam shrayeta tava pada sarva jagandham.
Agrahya sanmukharitam janatapa vargam.
Agrahya sanmukharitam janatapa vargam.
Lakshmyalayam taviganaya gunalayasya.
Lakshmyalayam taviganaya.
Matyasagorubhayamartha vivikta drishti. The aroma of your lotus feet, which is glorified by the great saints, awards people liberation and is the abode of goddess Lakshmi. What woman would take the shelter of any other man after savoring that aroma? Since you are the abode of transcendental qualities, what mortal woman with the insight to distinguish her own true interest would disregard that fragrance and depend instead on someone who is always subject to terrible fear? So she says that the aroma of your lotus feet, glorified by sages, is the blood of goddess of fortune. So you are gunalaya. See, kanyam pada sarvaja gandham. Your lotus feet, the fragrance of your lotus feet is glorified by sages. Agrinya sanmukharitam janatava vargyam lakshmi alayam. So lakshmi alayam means it is the place where Mother Lakshmi constantly wants to reside at your lotus feet. Janadvaya jalagalo janaya jananya lakshmiya khilasya saravan vitaya vidhatu. Remember this verse? 3.28. So she is always seen massaging the lotus feet of Krishna. So lakshmiyalayam tu aviganaya gunalayasya. You are guna alaya. You are an abode of transcendental qualities. Right? This guna is good qualities, not the material modes. So what mortal woman would disregard such lotus feet and depend on someone else? You are claiming to be having no good qualities. I say that we have all best qualities, like that she says. So, and also in the 17th verse, Krishna said, you should accept a more suitable husband, a first class man of the royal order who can keep, help you achieve everything in this life and in the next. So 42nd verse is also counter-argument for other, that 17th verse also. So what other woman is there, which woman will give up your shelter like that? And also for 17th verse, she gives two more arguments. In 43rd verse and 45th verse also she counter-argues with 17th verse. Thank you very much. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.